This is the third in a sequence of four talks that I've been privileged to offer. I regard these sentences that I'm, little short sentences that I'm speaking about, I don't know, I'm sorry, thank you, and I love you, I regard them as kind of mantras, guides that we can carry with us in our pocket. Little, sometimes I carry a little saying or poem or something in my pocket and take out. Yes, I'm reminded of something that I want to be aware of. And we need all the help we can get to live out of our deepest truth, our true nature. And so these are other offerings. Today, the sentence, thank you, complete sentence, thank you, is one of those mantras. This thank you is usually a response to something. And typically it's a response to something being given to you. Here. Take this. And in our practice, we put our palms together, bow, thank you. The bow, for me, is a physical expression of thank you. And we do a lot of bowing in our practice. So there's this welling up of gratitude in response to something. And what is it that is being given to us? Nothing short of everything. Buddha's words upon his enlightenment were, all beings have Buddha nature. What a deep recognition of the perfection of everything, of seeing so clearly the way in which everything that is gives itself just as it is to us, just as we are. Buddha saw this. I expect that he saw a cat. See the perfection of that cat giving itself in its full catness. And of course, we are Buddhas too. So we can see this. We can see this in everything as it gives itself, as every being gives itself to us. I was just looking out at the trees here at Chikoji. And I could see how the tree that was in front of me was giving itself fully as a tree, down to the very tips of the leaves. It was tree. Mm-hmm. Here I am for you, giving myself, I'm filling up with treeness. There was nothing that wasn't a tree in that tree. And when I see Bodhi or Mui, our cats here at Chikoji, they're just being fully cats. Just here we are. No judgment. I don't judge the tree. I don't judge the cats or the chickens. You know, they're just here we are. We are giving ourselves in our very being just freely. And so when you can see the world as Buddha, that is fully awake, you can see the gifting of everything. The gift in everything. Here I am. Here we are. And so the most natural response is, thank you. How wonderful. So Rumi, this is third poem for today. The Guest House. Some of you may have heard this one. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house, empty it of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever, whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So this being human is a guest house. Chikoji. It's a guest house. People, things appear at the door. Open the door. Now, of course, when something very beautiful and friendly appears at the door. Oh, sure. Come on in. Here's some tea. Let's sit. Enjoy each other's company. Very welcome. Gary Snyder's poem, Gratitude to the air, to the water, to the earth, to the sky, to all the great beauties of the natural world, to all the elements. So we open the door, and the sun is shining, and the birds are singing, and the breeze is cool and blowing, and there's somebody maybe someone in a beautiful kimono with a bowl of matcha, you know. It's just, oh, that's lovely. Come on in. Very welcome. But what if you open the door and there's a monster there. Or you open the door and there is somebody screaming at you, judging you, criticizing you. You open the door and somebody slaps you in the face. Or you open the door and there is a flood of pain. What then? So, Merwin's poem. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Faster and faster and faster. Dark though it is. Then things aren't so easy. It's not so beautiful. Come on in. So when all of that darkness appears at the door, it perhaps isn't necessary to sort of celebrate it, or to cultivate it, or to repeat it, or to encourage it, but to honor it. So this thank you is not so much, oh, it's great that you've arrived, or let's keep doing this again and again and again. Let's keep opening the door to this darkness. Sometimes you actually can't help but opening the door to the darkness, to the pain. And you open the door and there it is again. Oh, you. Oh, that. I thought we were done. I thought I had invited you in and made you a cup of tea and we resolved it all. You weren't going to go away forever. That you would never be a guest again in my house. We finished the visit. We've resolved it. And go visit some other guest houses. But no, the door opens. Oh, hello once again. Right. So, welcome. We have to visit again. Come on in. It's being hospitable. It's not necessarily, you know, being overly friendly, but it's being hospitable because you sense that actually what is visiting you is you. In all of your many manifestations. And some of those visitors you don't exactly want to look at or engage with. Too painful. Too frustrating, annoying, irritating. Thich Nhat Hanh has a lovely little kind of vignette of a baby who's crying. You have this baby in your arms. This baby is screaming, crying. And one of your options is to put your hand over the baby's mouth or hand the baby over to somebody else or just deny or ignore the baby, just put it in another room and close the door and hope that it stops crying. All of these resistances and denials and repressions. Get rid of this screaming being. It's like opening the door and, no, go away. I'm not thankful for this. I'm not going to bow to this. And so he says, what do you do when you have a crying, screaming baby? Well, you rock it a little bit. And you say, oh, let's settle you down a little bit here. So we can perhaps see why you're crying. Maybe you're hungry. And maybe there's a diaper pin stuck in your bottom. Maybe you've been bitten by a mosquito or something. Who knows? But I will never know unless I embrace this. I will never know if I silence this, reject it, or repress it. So I need to bow to it, to hold it tenderly, to hold it honorably, so I can look and see what it is that's troubling this baby. So we get these repeated visitors. Hello, you again? Come on in. Thank you. Thank you for coming back. Thank you for arriving. Being human is a guest house. Honoring everything in its givingness to you, even if it is painful. And once we are able to see the gift in everything, our natural response is gratitude, and after that, generosity. This welling up of gratitude gives way to giving back. So gratitude, the natural expression of gratitude is dana, generosity. It is the first perfection of our practice. First paramita is dana. We naturally want to give fully of ourselves, our full presence. Everything gives itself to us in its fullness, with everything it's got. As Bunkai played Handel with everything he had for three people in the Jikoji living room. It didn't matter. It was just giving. The Native American, in the Native American tradition, there is this this Indian giving. You may have heard the phrase, you're an Indian giver. Well, I think there has been a deep misunderstanding of what what it means to be an Indian giver. I mean, typically, the understanding is that if you give something to someone and they give it back to you, they're an Indian giver. Or you're given something and you give it back, you're an Indian giver because you're not appreciating the gift. But the real meaning of Indian giving is that anything that's given can never be possessed. Or as we might say in our economy culture, it can never become capital. It can never be something that you own. And so when you're given something, you're obliged to give it away. This is a very different understanding of not appreciating the gift and giving it back, but actually so deeply appreciating the nature of gift that you never hold on to it. You always pass it on. Gift it forward. The gift doesn't belong to anybody. Even our very bodies don't belong to us. And I sit with my mother's ashes often as a reminder that we have to give everything back. Everything. We own nothing. Everything we are is borrowed from the universe. This body, this mind, this practice, everything in our possession is borrowed. And when we borrow something, we usually say, thank you. So when we can experience everything as a gift, including our very being, we are filled with gratitude. And want to find a way to say thank you deeply from our deepest nature. So, any gifts of response?
There's a comment. It's overwhelming. Thank you. But the first line from Milarepa's songs, for gratitude, nothing to do but stop fixating on self. Mm. Nothing there.
Mm. Mm-hmm. It is interesting that if you pay attention to when gratitude fills you, there's nothing so effective as gratitude to stop thinking, to stop focus on self and generating stories, and because gratitude is exactly that movement beyond self. So it's an incredibly effective tool for stopping this thinking being. An incredibly powerful state of being. In fact, Alan Watts once said that as gratitude develops in you, it can become so strong and so overwhelming that you need a god to be the repository of it. Because that's how overwhelming it can feel. Where can it land? Where can you put it? What can receive it but a being of that magnitude?
Thank you for your attention. It reminded me of the discriminatory mind, discriminating mind that sometimes leads us into a lot of problems.
Mm.
And the gratitude and the thankfulness sort of heals that, you might say, and doesn't allow us or doesn't encourage us to go into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's such a root source of our issues in the practice. You know, the discrimination. Mm-hmm. I like that, I don't like this. Instead of saying, hey, let it all in. We'll deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. You made that point very, very well. In fact, I think it was Hakuin that said, preferences are a disease of the mind.
Yeah.
They're rampant.
And you see, in the Rinzai line, they take this and they use it as a tool
mm-hmm.
in the koan work.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't like it. We can't understand it. So we want to...
mm-hmm.
because Bagan mm-hmm. solves our problem for us.
Yeah. Yeah. I like this. It's constant.
Yeah.
It's a little too hot. It's a little too cold. My knee hurts. You know, it's raining. It's not raining. You know, my clothes don't fit right. It's constant. These preferences. And one of the beauties of our practice, I think, is this. Welcome it all. It's inclusive. Rumi, there is a field beyond right doing and wrong doing. Meet me there. Meet me at Chikoji. This field beyond preferences. Let's meet here, and let's say thank you to each other.
Just reflecting on gratitude and thankfulness brings such a quality of a vast space and abundance.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like something that, as you said, one thinks about as a gesture of saying something, it's actually a state of mind from which we can meet experience. And probably it's that sense of discrimination that constricts and reifies the self as something solid and concrete that we can put things on. And we go around and see what's the next thing that I can put in or what I'm going to reject. And it's so beautiful to soak in that sense of gratitude, because the inner abundance becomes obvious, right? That life is plentiful as it is right now in any situation. So yeah, I feel very spacious after reflecting on gratitude, and it's not something new, but it's something that I feel that I need to remember often,
mm-hmm.
how abundant the present is, regardless of what I do or accomplish or get or whatever. And the other thing that arises for me is how natural is kindness from that state of mind. What you say about the tree being there in its full tree-ness, like to the tips of the leaves, how different is is from a view of a tree as a resource. Like I was thinking the fields in the southern part of my country in Chile, where there's a lot of non-native trees that are planted to
mm-hmm.
make paper, and,
yeah.
and it's we call it green desert because it's green, but the land is destroyed.
Yeah.
And so that kind of utilitarian view of things, like something that we can rip off and get things from, is such a disease. And I think gratitude is a good antidote. Like it brings, it makes you want to take care.
Yes.
Of things.
Yes. And I appreciate the way in which you connected this gratitude with taking care of things, because it when you see things as gift in this way, giving themselves to all beings, and I'm thinking about the precepts, the most natural thing in the world, not to kill something that is offering itself to you so fully, and it just is natural not to want to damage it. And if you and same thing with all the precepts, they would follow so naturally. You would not have to experience them as prohibitions or as orders that were imposed upon you because you were inclined to be mischievous and nasty and naughty. Out of this gratitude, the precepts would flow. All of the precepts would flow without question. Thank you very much. That was beautifully said.
Thank you. I couldn't help thinking about this proverbial symbol of the door, because I am a builder and I have my own house that I've been working on forever. And my front door, when I put it in, I put a little spiral in there. And I needed a washer to hold it, so I drilled a hole in a quarter that says Liberty. So I look through there, and I decide whether or not I'm going to open the door or not. And recently, I created a mess. Building tile creates all kinds of dust.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed to vent this, and so reluctantly I opened the front door. It kind of worked, kind of worked. And then I thought, oh, I have a back door.
Mm-hmm.
So I opened the back door, and I let it go through.
Mm-hmm.
And works really well. But I don't have any of that business on the back door.
Thank you. So that is suggesting, I think I'm remembering as a kid, I lived in a ghetto in the Bronx, and a really dangerous neighborhood, and we had all kinds of security locks on our doors, double locks, and then this bar that went from the door into the floor, and also the peepholes, and so it was incredibly armored and
mm-hmm.
guarded our
mm-hmm.
our house. Our apartment wasn't a house, it's a little apartment. And when my mother came home from work, not only did we have all those locks and all those protective devices, but she had a special knock. It was I knew that was my mother. So it was the locks, this, and then the knock. And so I grew up in a very really protected world. And so this idea that in the end, there's nothing to protect us. Front door, back door, house, there's nothing, no peephole that can keep us safe in that sense. That there are no doors, there are no windows. It's just this. It's a delusion to think we can look through that peephole and decide, no, I'm not going to let you in. There's, that door is an illusion. That's already in. It's there. So it's just creating unnecessary suffering, unnecessary barriers. So yes, open all the doors, the windows, knock down the house. And as a matter of fact, this is what another thing that Buddha said on his enlightenment. He said, this house, all the rafters are falling down. The roof is collapsed. This structure that I've built, that I think is protecting me, is gone. I've seen the builder. No more. It's over. This is a profound teaching. Thank you.
The important thing I wanted to emphasize, though, is that the mess was created on the inside. The dust of the tile is not on the outside. The mess is on the inside. Opening the front door and then finally the back door allows that to...
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be so poetic.
Thank you.
Last week you spoke about I'm sorry, and this teaching that you gave, and this week is thank you. I've been fortunate to hear both of these teachings of it. The sense of connection in both of these teachings from saying I'm sorry and connecting with another being. And saying I'm thank you, thank you. I think goes to what you started the teaching. Because Buddha said everywhere I see Buddha. And you start to experience that through these actions that you say. There's a gap and a recognition. But I want to bring something additional up. In that, we have to work from ultimate truth, which is seeing the Buddha everywhere, recognizing our own face everywhere, recognizing that which has no name but can be experienced, and we have to have discernment, which means there's ultimate truth and there's relative truth. That's what I'm bringing up. The baby needs to have the diaper changed. It's all Buddha. But you are in a play. You are playing your part in a dance. Uh, So thank you for pointing out the profound truth of what the nature of the dance is and helping us experience that. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Sunday afternoon, I was studying. I got up and went to the door. I'd been reading, had my glasses on, and got to the door, opened the door, and there was a police officer there. Mm-hmm. And we exchanged glances, and I looked out the door and around the corner, and there was another police officer there. And he looked at me. They said, I got the wrong house. Is everything okay here? He said, I said, yeah. Yeah, it's okay. My youngest son was in the house too, and he comes up. And a neighbor across the street had heard somebody in a pool behind us yelling, I'm going to kill you! Oh, I'm going to kill you! And he thought it was coming from our house. But he read immediately what the tone was in our house. Because we were open. You know, open the door and open. And that's happened multiple times. I mean, I got two or three other police stories, but
where those somehow, your
Dharma talk. Somehow, you know, I don't go out like this, but meeting it, like you said, is whatever shows up.